get on the train. Pimpin' ain't easy.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Podding Ain't Easy here on the Rogue Opinions podcast feed. It's Ahsoka episode 6. Far, Far Away, I believe is the name of the episode, and it is very fitting given where our characters are going in this episode. And joining me, you know, it's a two-man team just for this episode. He, joining me right now, he tells me all sorts of stories from way back in the day. It's like Ahsoka. Yes, Carl Pierce. Hello, Carl.
Hello. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Make me sound even older than I am. Cheers, mate.
I mean, I was gonna. Originally, I had a much more Thrawn-based intro, but then I thought, bring back an old favourite. You know, talking about stories from long ago. It's all themed, you know. It's all themed.
We think all this shit through, believe it or not.
Yeah. For about 30 seconds, but you know, thinking for 30 seconds is still thinking.
I was going to say, if you do believe that, you'll believe anything.
If you believe that, may I inquire about your interest in some magic beans? We're back down to a two-man team, and no, it's not like episode 3, where we genuinely forgot Reese was interested in coming on board and forgot to invite him on the record. Generally, a thing that happened. Reese is feeling very much under the weather, so we recommended him a day trip to a galaxy far, far away to go get treated. And in the next couple of episodes, we will hop on our very own Pergil and go meet up with him to discuss all the events of the final two episodes. But Carl, I think Reese might not be too sad that he missed out on discussing this episode, because well, it's still a very good episode. There's very much worthwhile things to talk about, the stuff that we've been waiting for coming in this episode. But I think, obviously, of the two, this and last week, I think Reese is happier that he probably got on last week's one, because last week's one was a bit more emotional, whereas this one felt like it was very much once again setting you up for the next two episodes.
Yeah, it is definitely a slower episode, but you can't, when you're doing the series, you can't have every episode being super fast-paced. You've got to, as you say, you've got to slow things down and set things up.
Yeah, and we still also be happy they didn't need to talk about this one, because this one features exactly zero Hera, and by extension, zero arse shots of Hera. So I'm assuming he'll be very, very upset about that.
I imagine he's devastated.
If it wasn't for that opening bit with the Pergil, we'd have no Ahsoka either. You know, what kind of Star Wars show would do an entire episode, you know, without the title character and then cough, cough, pick up Boba Fett?
God, how did that ever happen then?
No, I mean, that would be just madness. Absolute madness, I say.
But it is what I expected after last week's episode sort of focused on the good guys, mostly Ahsoka and her sort of journey with Anakin. I had a feeling that this episode would probably focus on the villains, because you know they had a good head start in getting to Peridia and everything. So we get to see what they get up to. Mm-hmm.
Yes, definitely. We should mention this episode, like every episode, is is written by Dave Filoni. It's directed by Jennifer Getzinger. I believe that is how you pronounce it. She's done a lot of TV related work as a director, including Mad Men, Why Women Kill, Jessica Jones, who did 3 episodes of that, one episode of Daredevil, everyone I can see, and one episode of the miniseries Candy, which I keep seeing advertised on Disney Plus. I keep saying myself, I'm going to watch that at some point, and then I never get around to it. So she's done a lot in the TV, particularly with female-led shows, so it makes sense why she would come on board for a show like this.
That's a very good resume, to be fair.
I've taken a lot of interest in people who direct these shows, as I've mentioned. But yeah, we open up and we don't have really much else to talk about from outside of the world of Star Wars that we'd usually cover. All we do need to mention, though, is a bit of a programming note here, is that obviously we'll be covering the next two episodes of Ahsoka. And literally, funny enough, like the finale of the show comes out, like, this comes out on the Wednesday, by the Friday UK time, Thursday if you're in America. We get Loki season 2, and Cara and I will be jumping right back onto that bandwagon. I think we'll aim to get those reviews, if it's on a Friday here, get the reviews recorded on Monday. So the program will then be, our shows will hopefully be coming out on a Tuesday for the weeks preceding Loki's run on Disney Plus.
With any luck, after a strong first season, we're really looking forward to seeing where they go with Loki in season 2.
Yeah. It's very much like, I remember when we covered Mando originally back in the day when we started this, we were covering seasons 1 and 2, which we'd already seen, so it was weird going into season 3 not knowing what's happening.
Yeah.
I feel that way about season 2 of Loki, because I think I'd seen all of, if not most of it. You hadn't really seen any of it, and now we're both going in blind to this season.
Yes.
So, that'll be interesting. We did talk about, I say talk, I mean we discussed it for about as long as we discuss anything on this show in terms of ideas, about whether or not to focus more so on Loki or on Gen V. But I think we both quickly agreed that Loki was the one with the more focus, and Gen V will maybe suit itself to a more series-based overview. Not that I'm saying it won't be any good, because obviously it's the same people behind it as behind The Boys, so a lot of the same feel to it. But I think Loki is the one we're more interested on a more week-to-week basis.
When we had a visit from Mickey to make sure that we stayed the Disney Plus course.
And I was like, why are you advertising these shows as the date they come out in America? Why do we have to watch this Loki on a Friday? Why? What happened to the usual Wednesday slots? He told us to shut the fuck up in his high squeak voice and put yet another bag of money on the table. And we said, okay, thank you.
Yep, all £2.50, I bet.
Several members of Logan Paynes have discussed coming on for future Marvel Age reviews, but then they asked Mickey when he was here about the strikes, and we haven't actually seen them again. So hopefully they're safe return soon enough. Anyway, we got to get into the episode, because even though, like I said, maybe a bit of a slow episode, there's still a lot worth discussing. And as I said, we open where we left off the last episode in hyperspace, in the Perigal. We see a shot of them all flowing around, a lot more brighter. The way hyperspace looks, usually it's all like blue, but this is a lot more rainbowy coloured. Put me in mind of whenever Thor like gets like blasted up to back to Asgard in the Bifrost with all the rainbow colours around him. But a lot of people have thought, because there was that shot in Mando season 3 where Grogu looked at it and you could see the shape of the Perigal. A lot of people are convinced that this is that exact moment, that somehow this is where the two shows intersect, and that's what Grogu's seen. If you want to believe that, I have no way of proving it otherwise, so you believe what you want to believe.
I mean, you never know. That's not the worst theory I've ever heard, in all fairness.
Because like,
it might explain why you could sense him if Ahsoka was there, to be honest.
Yeah, possibly. I've also heard people theorizing that when that Ahsoka, I didn't even notice that, heard like a voice calling out to her as she was being rescued during the from the water in the last episode, and a lot of people are saying like that's her hearing Sabine in this episode when she tries to reach out to her, implying that maybe Sabine is getting a little bit better in terms of her mastery of the Force, and maybe she can live up to Hu Yang's criticism of her. Possibly. But yeah, like it is a decent theory, because we don't know exactly, even though they say all they take place around at the same time, we did see like she went from her appearance in Mando to suddenly hanging out with Luke, and then to this. So we don't necessarily know how much time passed between the two, and how close after this, and how, like, because they don't say they're happening at the exact same time. So you ever know what Mando's up to when she's doing this, or what she's up to when Mando's doing his show?
Yeah, exactly. As I say, it's quite plausible, and I've heard far worse theories through the years, so I'm willing to go along with this one.
You know, it's no more implausible than saying, oh yeah, Marika's definitely Starkiller. Like, he was never going to be Starkiller.
Oh no, honestly.
Well, speaking of America, I've heard a theory regarding the reveal of him and how that ties into what these Night Sisters are doing when we see them later on, which I think is very interesting. But yeah, so they're in the inside the Purrgil, they're making their way there, and they are talking about the stories of the Purrgil and everything, how you Young used to tell them to the young Jedi. Tim goes, "Ah, yes, Histories of the Galaxy, volumes 1, 2, and 3. And she said, "I always thought one was the best." I think a lot of people are having their theories about what that means, as in the idea of 1, 2, and 3, like the different trilogies of Star Wars. I like to think it's a reference to the prequels, episodes 1, 2, and 3, where Ahsoka, where the Clone Wars originated, and therefore Ahsoka originated. And also Dave Filoni has talked about his love of the prequels and how he feels they're very misunderstood for a long time. So this is Dave Filoni secretly saying, like, I secretly think the prequels are the best trilogy. And Star Wars fans, like, I would slag you for that, but you've given us so much, so I won't hate you for that.
Maybe Hu Yang's been telling us these stories all along.
maybe. Like,
but he does start when she does tell me a story. He does say, "Oh, it's in a galaxy far, far away."
I know. I was buzzing for that, but like a long time ago, and I went, "Is he gonna say? Is he gonna say in a galaxy far, far away?" He said the thing. Is that it? Are all these opening crawls? Was that Hu Yang reading these stories to us?
That's what I'm saying. That's my new theory.
Well, apparently George Lucas had like a thing written, like stories of, and I think there's some name of an alien race on the original script of Star Wars at the front of it. I don't know what it was called, but the idea of like all the events of these Star Wars movies, it said a long time ago, is that some distant race is reading these stories to others. And that's why they start with a crawl in a long time ago. But, you know, that's what George Lucas says. I mean, he had the idea decades ago, so who knows if that's still actually the case.
I think he retcons things for his own self, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think he does. I don't think he even knows what's going on anymore. But, yeah, so
he's,
before we get to that. Yeah, and I still would be angry with you if you created something along the lines of Jar Jar. You've not made such a mistake in your life. But we
probably made worse, to be fair, but...
But before we get the bit where Hu Yang saying that a long time ago, we did have this quick discussion about Sabine, where she's worried about her going. She's worried that Sabine went with them willingly, and, you know, I should have more time to prepare to make the right choice in regards to our hesitation to destroy the map. And then Hu Yang, basically being the voice of reason, said, "You know, the Force, you know, gives you a lot of insight, but it doesn't give you all the answers. If you say you prepared her, she prepared her for the right choice. Maybe for her, this is the only choice."
I mean, also, she would have had one hand if she'd have blasted it while she was holding it. So, you know, it wouldn't have been ideal.
Yeah, very much, yeah. Although, you know, Star Wars characters are used to having only one hand or one arm.
True, to be fair.
Like, so much so, like, I remember, I don't know if you could do this today with an action figure, but I remember, obviously, you see Anakin get his arm cut off in episode 2. I had an action figure of episode 2 Anakin with a removable arm.
I was panicking for a second. I don't know if you could do that. I think I said, I don't know if you could do this today, but I cut my own arm after me, like Luke.
Let's say there was like a magnet at the halfway point of his arm, we could remove it and then reattach the
That's
arm.
That's pretty cool, to be fair.
If you wanted to recreate very accurately, you know, don't just use your imagination. Look, literally take his arm off. Yeah, it was pretty cool, actually. Yeah, so she says, like, she doesn't want to think about it too much. So it says, "Yeah, well, I changed my mind. Tell me one of those stories." And then he says, "All right, long time ago, a galaxy far, far away." And it's funny because we kind of got something close to that at the start of this series, where we had the opening crawl for the very first episode. It's feeling a lot more like those classic Star Wars. And the episode is called Far, Far Away, as I said. And you've got to imagine David Tennant when he got the script and he goes, "Oh, I get to say the thing." I imagine he's a massive Star Wars fan, as a lot of people are.
I do like his little quip at the beginning when he says, "Riding inside a star whale. Now I really have done everything."
You know, it's amazing, like, certain shows you go into, the last few shows we went into, there's somebody who we didn't expect to be the highlight of the show, and they end up doing it. It's him and this, and Sonya Fallsworth in Secret Invasion.
I'm definitely looking forward to his turn as Doctor Who, which will be coming back this November, I think, for its 60th anniversary. So I was, you know, I was excited before, but seeing how good David Tennant's been as Hu Yang, I'm even more excited for it now.
Yeah, I don't, honestly, you know me, I don't really follow Doctor Who, but I heard a lot of people talking about how, you know, you had Jodie Whittaker and Osley, and, you know, the fact that he's a time traveller who can change form every so often. You know, apparently him changing to a woman was a bit too much for some people, but then they've got another actor who's going to be directly after David Tennant, who's black, and a lot of people are accusing him of saying, like, you really only brought David Tennant back to ease the transition so people wouldn't get annoyed.
I think it's a bit more than that. It's because it's the 60th anniversary and he's one of the most popular Doctor Who's. Probably him and, what's his name? Tom Baker are probably the two most synonymous actors of the role, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think with his appearance, I think he's coming up on the most, because I think for a long time, Tom Baker had it for the most, like, episodes or most appearances, and when you count Christmas specials and times where he's come back for the part. But and yeah, I've heard a lot of people who know more about this talking about between Tom Baker or David Tennant in terms of their favourite Doctor Who's.
Tom Baker, who also voiced a character in Rebels.
Mm-hmm. I can never remember his name, but he's this big,
no, like, I can't. Creature. No, he was perfect for the, his voice was perfect for the character, though. But yeah, I can't remember what it was now either.
And he talked a lot with Kane Jarrison and gave him no gains there. And, yeah, the three most famous roles of Tom Baker: Doctor Who, that thing from Rebels, and of course himself in Little Britain, is where I was introduced to him. You know, I know a lot of things from Little Britain haven't aged well, but a lot of his dialogue is still good, because, like, there's one where he's introducing a guy going to a bookshop and a sketch goes, I read a book once, it was called Who on Earth is Tom Baker?
I don't find out they somehow snuck a TARDIS onto Ahsoka somehow. I'll be devastated. If you freeze this frame here at 0.2 seconds, you'll see a glimpse of the TARDIS.
I mean, you talked a bit with the whole idea traveling to a different galaxy, they all get a bit timey-wimey and everything with the world between worlds and everything. And they've got a Doctor Who, one of the guys who played Doctor Who, voicing a character who's going through this whole time travel arc. So it's very much like Doctor Who, like, oh, we're traveling to another galaxy. It's like, are you sure this isn't Doctor Who? I'm sure I've done this before. Then, of course, we spend the rest of this episode with their villains alongside Sabine, and they go to this planet Peridi, like you said, and they say, oh, it's, you know, surrounded, the image on the map of it surrounded by Purrgil. What they don't tell you is that all the Purrgil are dead. It's just these bones and corpses floating through space.
It's a Purrgil graveyard. It's sort of their final destination where they sort of migrate to pass away. And also the planet they're going to is the original homeworld of the Dathomorians.
Yeah, apparently they then, so this is where the Dathomir came from, and then they settled on Dathomir. Thinking, we're the Dathomir, we sit on their planet, what shall we call it? Dathomir. Like, they really don't take time sometimes, really don't waste your time naming planets sometimes here. We are the Mandalorians, where are you from? Mandalore.
Yeah, but to be fair, in human history, we've been pretty shite at names. And we're in this new city in the new world, America. What should we call it? Well, I really like York. How about New York? Yeah, that's the one.
I remember Scottish comedian Danny Boyd did a sketch about, like, Australia naming places. Like, lads, I've been told there's already a South Wales in Britain, so we need a new name for that. What is it? New South Wales. Right? Also, when you got time, you need to find a name for that great big barrier reef at the top of the country. I get your point there.
Well, they'll just name it after themselves.
Yeah. But, or I'm waiting for the point where they get to a planet, they call it Planet McPlanet Face, you know, at this stage. Yeah, we got the, like you said, like Bailey's girl says about this planet, it's a burgled graveyard where they go to die, and, well, I guess don't be too optimistic before it happens to those burgers that are bringing Ahsoka and Yu Yang later on. But we go to the planet, and when they, Morgan and Elsa say that our ancestors figured out how to ride these whales, and that's probably how they got to the galaxy that we know since before time was counted and everything. Which is basically saying, like, again, another way of saying a long time ago. But well, it's funny, these, like, the Death Mary, like, Night Sisters, like, they love riding these weird creatures because Danny Trejo's character in Book of Boba Fett told us they used to ride Rancors as well, so they love getting on a random creature and just riding it places.
Now, who first thinks, I know what I'll do, I'll try and ride this creature? I mean, it could go seriously wrong. I'm waiting for someone to express a long time ago, as in, even before Carl Pierce was alive. Scott's about to say, nothing goes that far back.
I had several jokes in my head going at the one time. Yeah. Only, like, long before there was only, back to a time where there were only two people roaming in the air, Carl Pierce and Bruce Forsyth.
There was just three of us, Carl Pierce, yeah. Adam and Eve. Three sons are unbelievable.
What people don't know is that Carl spent most of his time hiding slowly around the garden. No one saw him. He was in there in his snake costume. He got it probably still up in the charity shop.
Don't give the game away. That's why I'm sitting here with no arms and legs, you see.
That's why he's so shirted. I'll have to do everything around. So it's a wonder he's able to set up escape. Just yeah, so that's on the keyboard until he presses the right button.
That's why I don't like apples anymore either.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. We said, oh, we've got not much to really talk about here, like, and we just decided to talk bollocks.
It's not the fact, it's what listeners expect.
Anyway, yeah, Peridia. They're here, they talk about how the age, how old the planet is and how long they've been here. Got Sabine in some sort of holding cell, feeling like she's kind of been screwed over on her end of the deal. But they eventually do bring her in front of these sisters. Again, they get these runes that they walk up to with these three night witches all around it. Like, I heard a lot of people talk about, oh, Toil and Trouble, the name of the second episode. Oh, it's like a reference to Macbeth. It's a thing read by the three witches and everything. And a lot of people talk about all the similarities in that Macbeth. And then you see this scene where they walk out, like, this is pretty much straight out of fucking Macbeth. This is the fucking three witches that he goes to visit. Like, these three Night Sisters. Very, mind you, if you've watched, obviously, any of the Night Sisters from the Clone Wars, you know this is very accurate in terms of the design and everything.
Yeah. I like the way Shin's not very keen on these witches. She just goes to being more witches.
Yeah, well, she's very consistent. She's not really into this whole witch thing, but she's really got along with it because Balin's evolved. And then as we get hints to, Balin's got his eye on some other great plan. But I do love that they just look over at Sabine and goes, it reeks of the Jedi.
Yeah, so perhaps she has got a bit more sort of Jedi in her than we thought, if they can sort of sense it in her.
Either that, or if you hang around with a Jedi like Ahsoka long enough, apparently to certain creatures, you know, Jedis give off a scent that hangs on to you the more you spend time around them.
Maybe.
Which also begs the question, you know, later on, Thrawn's able to say that, you used to be a Jedi, didn't you, Balin? And the Night Sister kind of looks a bit surprised, like he was a Jedi. So clearly they could sense something in Sabine, but somehow Balin was able to mask that he ever used to be a Jedi, at least from them.
Yeah, and he sort of refers to him as General Balin, doesn't he? So he must have fought in the Clone Wars by the sounds of it.
Yeah, because obviously, if you remember from much of the Clone Wars and everything, or even in Episode 3, they don't call him like Master Kenobi or Master Skywalker or Master Windu. It's like they always call them generals because they are, like I said, they're forced to be soldiers and everything because they've got stuck in this bloody war. So when we have, like, Sabine gets like taken away and left out in isolation while they prepare for Thrawn, and they said, like, they do praise Morgan Elsbeth, which is like, you've done our ancestors proud. She says, where's Thrawn? And she says, one of them says, you'll have to wait, he's coming. I think, and that really sums up the last five episodes or so. Like, that's just waiting for Thrawn.
So it's like, not just telling Morgan that, but the audience as well, that you still have to wait for him.
And to be fair, it doesn't actually take that much longer for us to see him. No. I had this sickening feeling that, like, are we going to have to wait to like the very last few minutes of this episode to actually see the bastard?
Oh. But what a fucking entrance it is. I mean, as we were talking about great things Disney have done with Star Wars, I think this is going to be top 10. The entrance for Thrawn's live-action reveal is just phenomenal for me. I love the way the Star Cruiser sort of almost like docks with that big, or whatever you want to call it, platform, yeah. Stone tower platform thing, and all these stormtroopers are lined up, and you got this big sort of heavy beating sort of score, and they're all sort of shouting Thrawn, Thrawn, Thrawn as he sort of marches through the rows of perfectly formed stormtroopers, and it's almost kind of spooky, isn't it? It's mad. It's a mad scene. I love it. And tell you what, I admit this to Reese, but his captain with the gold face, I found kind of creepy. Just didn't look right somehow.
Yeah. He creeped the fuck out of me. A lot of people comparing it to something like one of the helmets from Gladiator and things like that, which is an apt comparison. Because like earlier on, Balin talked about, gives like vague hints about the history of this place and everything. He said, oh, this place used to be like a dream told in like fairy tales or whatever. And talked about, oh, the Jedi, you know. Because he got asked, did you miss the Jedi Order? And he went, no, really, it was all inevitable what happened. And he says it being a dream, and what's the first line that Thrawn does? Like, obviously, it beautifully, like you said, to show you the stormtroopers, there's that kind of a drone, like that drop in the music. The minute it cuts to the camera, like you see it lower, you see Morgan Elsbeth close up of her face, cut back, and the next thing you see when that music drops, just this row of stormtroopers, their gears all kind of tattered, like it's been kept together all these years. And you see him being walking from the back, and he's coming more and more in focus, and you see his face getting close to the camera, and his first line was, once a dream has now become a frightening reality for those who oppose us.
It's a brilliant line, isn't it? I love the fact that even though the stormtrooper's gear is, you know, dirty, grimy, and being held together with tape by the looks of it at some points, that his uniform is absolutely still pristine, which is Reese made a bit of a quip when I told you about it. It was nice to see Thrawn's still got a good dry cleaners, but you'd expect it from him to be able to. He's that sort of character who would maintain his appearance, because I think it's an important part of who he is as a leader as well as a person.
Yeah. Seeing three people say that if you zoom in, you see a few bits of wear in his shirt, but like, it feels like he's got a thing what Thrawn would do where he's trying to hide any imperfections, and he's out, like you said, he has to keep remain looking strong and everything as a leader. And his line makes sense for what everything Ahsoka's been saying about trying to stop him from coming back and what it could lead to, and the nightmare of what it lead to, the nightmare of another war, and the idea of his appearance and him being reunited with Morgan. Everything seems like that fear that she had are being brought into reality.
I did see something on X that made me laugh. Someone had put, the actor's got the voice spot on. I didn't read the comments below, but I imagine they were pretty daft at the poor person. Yeah, because it is the same actor.
That is the voice. Oh. And
I can compare it with when What's it, the Batman voice man, is it Kevin Conroy? Kevin Conroy. When you play the games and it's his voice doing Batman, it just feels so right. And with Peter Cullen voicing Optimus Prime in the films like he did in the cartoons back in the day, it just felt right. And it's the same with it's Lars Mikkelsen, isn't it? I mix his name with his brother sometimes. It just feels right, doesn't it, to hear that voice?
Yeah, I did see a nice tweet out there, like a picture of like Thrawn close up for his introduction, and then a picture of Mads Mikkelsen when he was in his Imperial uniform from one scene of Rogue One. The idea of like, they both been in Star Wars and they both play characters that were integral to the Empire, because obviously. The big thing about Mads Mikkelsen's character is he helped design the Death Star. But like I said, like in terms of like adaptation from animation, everything, like keeping somebody the same person, like it's spot on, and like even the design, like the hair is like slightly a little bit back. You got that kind of V cut indent on the top of his head. It feels weird to say, but he's the right shade of blue, because I think a lot of people were mourning that Cad Bane was too light in the color of blue, which is a. If you have time to mourn about that, then. I commend you for having such free time.
I did someone found he's not tall enough, and a comment below said actually Lars Nicholson's 6'4", which is actually an inch taller than Thrawn is supposed to be.
Yeah, but I don't think he needs to be so imposing in terms of fight. I think it's just like what you know he's capable of, like, not physically but mentally, that causes him to kind of tower over people.
And yeah, and also they do sort of say because of lighting and such, blue is hard to do on TV.
Especially with a lot of productions like this, like they're moving from green screen to kind of a bluer screen. So obviously you don't want the colour to contrast to the background. Like I've seen like people who present videos on YouTube but they have a green screen, obviously can't wear a green shirt because it all fades into the background. But a scene is just kind of, he's like I said, just talking that slow inflection, like talking to Baelin Skull. Like he said, oh, you must be General Baelin Skull of the Jedi Order and everything. And they mentioned Sabine Wren and everything. That is a familiar name.
She will be useful to us. You're quite right. He's always so calm and measured. He's not known for really sort of shouting at his underlings like the likes of Vader and whatnot. But somehow it's even more scary, isn't it?
A little bit, yeah, because you wonder, like, this is how he talks now. Like, what happens if you really get on his bed? So, like, someone who's so calm, you're waiting for them just to, like, snap at any point. And I do love, like, he needs to get some cargo on a, you know, Morgan's, like, ship, which will help take them home. And he goes, it will take 3 cycles. He goes, that is an acceptable time frame. And no. I believe, like, or three rotations, which I believe is just their way of saying 3 days. So
yeah.
Imagine the events of what happens in this, and then the events of the next episode will be basically mostly across those 3 days, and basically a race of try to stop them before they can get back into their universe.
I'm also imagining, because that hyper ring is so big, that his Star Cruiser will be able to dock into it.
Yeah, because like, I do love the way they shoot the car and the scale of it. The idea, I mean, it looks like that fucking Star Destroyer is like rising from behind the thing, and the scale of it, because before that, but they, as we said, Sabine was in the cell trying to reach it to Ahsoka through the Force, and things shoots his hand and things start shaking, so they make you think for a second. Wait, is she actually now one with the Force? Like, no, it's just everything shaking because there's a massive.
That was quite clever, wasn't it? Yeah, I thought, oh, perhaps she's doing something, and then yeah, you realise it's the big massive Star Destroyer. That's something they've always got right from Star Wars, is, you know, how to shoot these ships and the you know, give you the sheer scale of the things because they're so massive.
Definitely, she confronts. Sabine gets brought to Thrawn and everything, and basically saying he's coming for Ezra Bridger and everything. Is yes, that's another familiar name to Thrawn, because also they got trapped here together. And he says, like, we'll honour your agreement, you'll have your provisions, you'll have something to write, and we'll give you any information we have on our last known location of Ezra Bridger. So like at some point Ezra kind of went on the run from Thrawn and kind of waited for Morgan that to come, and he's clearly had some assistance at some point from the Night Sisters as well. People have talked about what this cargo is that he's getting shipped, and you see these like crates getting moved later on in the episode. I've heard a lot of people speculate that, you know, seemingly some dead Inquisitor was brought back to life with, you know, Morgan Elsbeth's like Night Sister magic, which was how he got Marduk. And people are theorizing that basically what he says, we've lost some of our forces. So basically, I think the idea is that potentially it's like basically dead stormtroopers in those boxes that they're going to reanimate, and so they can increase the size of Thrawn's army.
Could but possibly be, you never know, there's all sorts of things. I also like the line he gives when he says to me, what a delight it is to see a familiar face after all this time. And I honestly think he means that genuinely as well, because he has been sort of in exile basically with him and just his guard. So even if it is an enemy, it probably is nice to see somebody he knows.
So I do also love kind of how you get you close up him and his red eyes as well when she talks to him when it's find Ezra and everything, and how she like she came with him to in order to find Ezra. Goes like, you basically gambled the fate of the, you helped shape the fate of the entire universe on that belief that he's still alive. Just I think it's quite chilling in that sense, that you think you can tell maybe that theory about the stormtroopers and the Night Sister magic is true, because when Enoch speaks later on and gives her like the lightsaber back and tells her to die well, quote unquote, he speaks with a similarly deep voice from
he does, doesn't he?
So he was influenced by some sort of magic as well.
You never know.
I do like the creature that she kind of rides, and you see Baelin and Shin riding later on, kind of like a cross between a dog and a horse, with a little bit of hyena in terms of tendencies. Like it quickly goes attached to Sabine. I think they do a decent enough job with the CGI where it doesn't look too out of place.
No, it looks quite good actually, and yeah, I like the fact that the minute she runs into trouble, it runs off, and then when it tries to come back, she's not having any of it. But, no, you left me. She sort of points him to go away, but the screen sort of lingers on this empty space, so you sort of know it's going to turn around and start running back after her, which I thought was quite funny actually. I enjoyed that a little bit.
That was because you don't know, you talk about there being bandits out there and all sorts of things out there basically killing each other in order to survive, and so you can tell that probably some of them have killed his men, and then almost as soon as she goes off, she basically tells he orders Baelin and Shin to chase her down. Like, what about the agreement? Like, the agreement was that she would have the opportunity to find Ezra. We never said that we would actually let her find him. So in Thrawn's case, basically, either they get stranded there, or they kill Sabine. Either Sabine and Ezra get killed, or they get stranded there. Either are preferable in his case, because he can't allow either of them to prevent them from completing their task.
But he also says, same goes for your two mercenaries. So it shows he doesn't really care much for Baelin and Shin either. Whether Baelin and Shin realise this, I'm not too sure.
Yeah. I think because at one point he asks who they were, or like you see, or you brought people with you, and she said they're just mercenaries. So she's Morgan Elsa doesn't really care about them either, even that though they are forced to, so she sees them as means to an end. And again, like we said, Baelin clearly wanted to come to this place because he's looking for something that will give him quote unquote power, like, because he talks about, you know, the Jedi and the Empire and this vicious cycle. It was always inevitable that the Jedi would fall. And she asked him, "Was Thrawn, would that give us power? Would it be Arthur?" And he goes, "That kind of power is fleeting. What I'm looking for will end the cycle."
Yeah, and he says some about calling to him. But we also learn a little bit more about sort of Shin's origins when she talks about, "Do you know Ezra?" And he goes, "No, he's too young. He's not from the temple. He's one of the Balkan Jedi's that were trained in the wild." And Shin's like I was, and he says, no, he was trained as a Jedi. I trained you to be far more. So like I was wondering aloud in one of our later episodes that sort of answers that question. She was someone he obviously found after he left the Order, and he realized she was force sensitive and took her under his wing and trained her.
Yeah, it does seem that way, I think. You kind of agreed with you in that term, I think, because like, she's still fairly young, and Yang even wasn't able to recognise her lightsaber, so clearly kind of someone who's flown under the radar, and it also fits, you know, we're kind of referred to by Filoni and other people as like as dark. Yeah, they've not been called such on this show, but and all we get is like Bailen saying, we are no Jedi, so again, it reinforces the idea that like, they live outside the whole barriers of like Jedi and Sith.
I do. I really like the actress who plays Shin Hattie. I think even though she doesn't have many lines, she seems to say a lot with her eyes for me, which you know, a lot of actors and actresses can't really do. So I quite like the subtleties of her expressions and that, and the fact she can say a lot without having many lines.
You know, you say it best when you say nothing at all, as Ronan Keaton famously said.
You were a Rodan Keaton fan.
Looking aside, I was a fan of one song, because once again, for whatever reason, I always stopped and listened whenever Life is a Roller Coaster came on the music channel, and I always spun. I always had to spin around the room like in the music video. And I maintain to this day that song is a fucking tune and a half.
It is. Every time, honestly, I used to tell myself I didn't like it, but every time it finished on the radio, I'd catch myself singing it for ages afterwards.
I mean, I know a little about Rowan Keaton and his time in Boyzone or anything like that. I mean, I bet you never thought you'd hear fucking Rowan Keaton discussed in any length on a Star Wars related show, but... Legit, a few years ago I re-downloaded the song, it's now on my Spotify playlist, and it's one of those songs from when I heard when I was younger that I have in my playlist, that when, particularly if I'm a bit pissed and I listen to my Spotify playlist and that comes on, all of a sudden it becomes like one of the greatest songs. I'm like, yes, come on. Also, I wouldn't spin in that case, and otherwise I'd be very, very sick.
The legend is Ronan Keaton.
He found love, they found Thrawn. It's all connected. Yeah, that bit where they talk about Ezra Bridger was after they found a scene of these bandits that were killed, because Sabine gets in a bit of trouble. She gets kind of outnumbered when trying to use her blast, but thankfully she's got her Beskar on, which helps protect her. But then she's better this time with her lightsaber, when she manages to fend off people who aren't other Force users. She managed to take them out.
Were you like me shouting at the TV going, use your bloody lightsaber?
I thought that as well. But so she finds these creatures, these kind of like trying to disguise themselves like rocks in order to, you know, stay hidden. And then she finds that he's got like a
her mount, whatever you want to call it, actually found them, to be fair to it. That's good credit where it's due, because he sort of kept poking at it, and she goes, it's just a rock. You're embarrassing yourself.
Yeah, cause he keeps sniffing like he's a sniffer dog and everything. Like, he drinks out of the water right before, he goes, is that it? You're just thirsty, is that it? And then he finds this good idea. We find that he's got like a wee rebel insignia, and he's asking about Ezra Bridger. He keeps speaking his lines, but it seems like he understands what she's saying. And he ends up taking him to this village where there's all these similar creatures, and they're all looking, and she's having to tell our creature, like, stay, like, don't, because he keeps looking at them like he's wanting to keep them, like, oh, come on, let me get, come on. And then the same look Mad Dog gives another dog when it passes.
Like baby Yoda and fish eggs.
Yeah, very much. But we get to the moment where they're all looking at her, and like they're all kind of stopping and staring and everything, and it's kind of slow speed, and then it kind of pans around, you hear a voice, and you turn around, and it's Ezra's. How do you symbolize that someone's been gone for a long time? You give them a beard, and that's what Ezra Bridger's got here.
Yeah, he's all grown up with a full beard and everything. And yeah, you just heard him say, I knew I could count on you.
he does say, oh, it didn't take you long enough. And she goes, well, in our defense, you never exactly told us where you were going.
Do we sort of know how long they have supposed to been sort of disappeared for or whatever?
I think they try and say that like it wasn't that long before like the start of the original trilogy where Rebels ended, and then if it's like 5 or so years after that, the original trilogy that Mando ended, so it's like some people have said 9 years, some said about a few years longer than that, so almost a decade technically in Star Wars canon that he's been away. And so obviously it's amazing to see he seems somewhat well adjusted, like he's gotten with these like wee creatures, he's friendly and he speaks their language now, and Thrawn seems somewhat adjusted for the fucking Imperial and everything, so they haven't been gone long enough to fully go insane, it seems like.
Well, yeah, luckily he's met some sort of people or species that he's been able to befriend to stop him from going mad. I'm sure if he'd have been isolated all on his Jack Jones, he might have gone insane in that sort of period. But I do like it. Sort of like he's learned the language, and he sort of says at one point, you know, we don't stay in one place for very long. So that probably explains why Thrawn and whoever have not been able to find him. So obviously they were hoping that Sabine would lead them to him, which she's unwittingly done. And she sort of doesn't lie, but she sort of glosses over how she got there and found him. So whether he'll be so happy to see her when he realizes what she's done, because he did that, he sacrificed himself to get rid of Thrawn, and now Thrawn, you know, she's sort of undone all that basically.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, like you said, my plan worked, didn't it? And like not telling that, pretty much them being there and Thrawn being reunited with Morgan Ellsworth, it's kind of a starting a series of events which will pretty much undo his plan. So, kind of sad note to that question.
It's almost like that Anakin and Padme meme.
Oh, very good, very good.
It is, though, isn't it?
It is, very much. And like, again, it's the idea of like Sabine very much complained by this focus for this one goal of finding Ezra again, and she doesn't want to tell him everything immediately, even though she could very easily could. She wants to kind of enjoy this moment of them being together again.
And just as well, what happened was.
Yeah, well, you see, I could have destroyed the map, but you'd be trapped here forever. But it also means that Thrawn might be coming back with an army, so, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Neither here nor there between friends, eh?
What's the potential, you know, what's another galactic war between friends, you know? Right. But, so we have this kind of reunion and everything. It's a bit too early to tell how this actor is going to be, because all we've seen before this was a kind of recording of him. It was his kind of life where he's looking in a kind of a shorter hair, looking like a more accurate Ezra Bridger. But obviously, the idea of time passing is why he looks like this, is not exactly like how he did in the cartoon, which is the same reason as to why Sabine in the first two episodes had long hair, because obviously it's meant to be, you know, years later and she's not worn the helmet, but when she wears the helmet, that's when she cuts her hair like she has here. So you can be forgiven for him not being exactly like Ezra, because it's meant to be Ezra, you know, growing up, as we said.
Exactly. And Thrawn's like a completely different species, so we don't know how he ages, so you can sort of let him off for looking, you know, very similar.
That blue
skin just doesn't wrinkle.
I've seen some people speculate in terms of Star Wars canon, what they know of Thrawn, that he's supposed to be at this point in the timeline about 70 years old, thereabouts, which is weird, because like the way that some creatures age, because like Grogu's meant to be in his 50s, and yet Red Species still a baby, whereas Thrawn is this, you know, wise Imperial, and he's 70s.
Exactly, but I'd say he's of his species age, because he's the only one of his kind we know of, I think, isn't he? So his species could age far differently. The 70s could still be, you know, a bit like the Skrull who mates with Samuel L. Jackson. He says, I'm not bad for a 120-year-old. He's like, oh, I'm only 40 on Earth terms.
I've not even entered my midlife crisis shopping spree phase yet. then one of the last scenes we get in the episode is basically, even though they say that these burglars could take them out anywhere, we get an indication that they're taking them to the right place, because, you know, the Night Sisters have sensed that they say another is coming, a Jedi. They mention Ahsoka Tano. They claim that she, you know, they believe that she was deceased. And this, he says, I will acquire your assistance once again. He said, tell me everything about her. And he even says, like, her abilities or this, that, and says her master, which is interesting because it's been talked about in certain, I don't know if these stories are canon yet, but that Thrawn worked out that Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader are one and the same, because he recognized when Vader was piloting a ship, he flew in a similar pattern than Anakin did. So he knows about that part, but somehow doesn't know that Anakin Skywalker had an apprentice. So he'll be shocked when he gets that revelation.
I kind of hope we do sort of see him get that information on screen, because I'd like to see his reaction, and if he knows, you know, Anakin's is Vader, like you're alluding to. So that'd be quite cool if we get to see him learn that information on screen rather than an off-screen thing, but who knows. And then, yeah, he turns to the Night Sisters and I need more assistance with your magics. And then the lead one says, the threads of destiny demand it. That's quite unnerving, isn't it? But the threads of destiny that are demanding things. I've got a bad feeling about this, Scott.
I do too. And it doesn't help the fact that the last shot we see is just a very, you know, very happy Thrawn, very close up on his face, looking very sinister indeed, as we close out the episode, you know, as we await, you know, Ahsoka arriving and that confrontation, because I'm sure she's, in a way, you know, interfered with Thrawn's plans, but I don't think they've really met directly, you know, when she was working with the Rebels as Fulcrum and everything. And I'm wondering if, like, he'll try and use the information, knowing that she's Darth Vader's apprentice, to try and get in her head, but then she'll be like, well, she's had this experience in the world between worlds where she won't allow it to get to her.
Yeah, she's different now, so hopefully that won't work, but we'll have to see sort of what happens, because obviously Thrawn's going to escape and make his way back, because, you know, Dave Filoni and that have got big plans for him going forward. So it'd be interesting to see how he sort of, you know, gets away, and is there any sort of kind of victory for Ahsoka in this series, or would it end on a bit of a cliffhanger with the villains almost winning, a bit Empire Strikes Back-ish. So that's quite interesting to see how they end the series.
Yeah, kind of like that. As a comparison, you know, Disney aren't also aren't afraid of that kind of ending, you know, Infinity War being a prime example of, you know, the villain winning in the end, and the good guys having to come back next time around to correct everything. I do think we got a healthy amount of Thrawn after all this waiting. We got that first scene and that beautiful introduction. We got the stuff with him and Sabine, and then later on the stuff of him learning of Ahsoka coming. And so then that further builds anticipation for him and Ahsoka coming face to face inevitably.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
And I believe you even said, like, maybe they'll give us more of them in the last couple of episodes to make up for the fact that we had to wait. And if this episode's anything to go by, I think you may have been right on that one.
Yeah, we get plenty of them in this. It is almost a fraught episode, but I definitely think we'll probably get another confrontation between Bail Skull and Ahsoka, I would imagine. Maybe even see Ezra in a duel, see if he's carried on his training and got any better in his isolation. You imagine he's had to do something to keep himself occupied.
Yeah, because we don't should forget the lightsaber that Sabine's been training with, and she used, and that is what it is, obviously Ezra's lightsaber. So she'll give that back to her. Maybe he's found a way to make a new lightsaber even out here, but that remains to be seen. But Caro, an episode I didn't know if we'd, other than Thrawn, everything, that we'd have a lot to talk about, because runtime wise it isn't one of the longer episodes that we've had to cover. But you know, in our own way, we found to really bleed this episode for all it's worth, and I think all it's left to do is give any final thoughts and any and your rating overall for this episode.
Well, you know, I think in hindsight, even though it's not quite as exciting as the last two, I think it's a better episode than you first think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a bit more, you know, a bit more information given. There's a bit going on. I'd probably have given it 7.5, but I think that awesome entrance of Grand Admiral Thrawn pushes it to an 8 for me.
Mm. I think an 8 is the highest I can probably go with it, and a lot of that is on the strength of Thrawn, as you said. Like, I know there have been mixed thoughts on some people on how Disney have handled Star Wars. I mean, on one hand, you've got these great TV shows, and then the sequel trilogy wasn't what a lot of people wanted it to be. But I have seen a similar thread on Twitter of people saying that introduction of Thrawn is among the top three best things that Disney has done with Star Wars. That just that introduction of Thrawn, and I don't know. No, I can't really disagree with a lot of people. I can't think of a character introduction like in Star Wars in recent history that's come anywhere close to being as epic as that.
I mean, it shows you the quality of the show, Ahsoka. In the last two episodes, they've managed to do things that are top tier Star Wars things, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka stuff, and the introduction of live action Thrawn. So, you know, it shows you how good Fellaini's has got this nailed on.
There was like a short, like 10-minute thing about Ahsoka, like a behind the scenes thing on Disney Plus that I watched the other day, and like even Jon Favreau said a thing that a lot of others have said. Jon Favreau said, it's like the whole master and apprentice. Dave George Lucas was the master, Dave Filoni was the apprentice, and clearly, if like you said, with the praise he's got for the last episode and then this episode, the student has very much become the master at this stage. I believe, like, he can next see George Lucas like Darth Vader at the start, at midway through A New Hope, like, when I left you, George, I was but a learner, but now I am the master.
Did you see that little bit of behind the scenes footage with Hayden and Rosario Dawson?
I don't think I did. I heard there was some stuff, but I didn't.
Yeah, it's only a few minutes long, but apparently they know each other from way back as well.
There you go.
Which I never knew.
I've been on such a Star Wars kick, but thanks to this show, because like, it's reminding me of all this other stuff. And it really got me going. Like, so I watched like this episode of Ahsoka last week. I think it was like episode 5 I watched last week, and then I watched that 10-minute documentary about Ahsoka, and then I rewatched that hour-long special they did about the behind the scenes of the Kenobi series from like last year. So I'm on such a kick. And there's a scene I forgot about where Hayden Christensen's on set for like the introduction scene to the Grand Inquisitor and to like the Inquisitors, and you got fucking Rupert Friend sitting there in full Grand Inquisitor get up, and Hayden's there like, oh, hello, and everything. Oh, I've not seen you for a long time. Like he said to him, when are you going to get your gear on?
Yeah, and there's because like Ewan McGregor sort of, he didn't need to be on set that day, but he wanted to be there for when Hayden first dons the Darth Vader costume, and he said, I find it really scary.
Yeah, like seeing Darth Vader come out, or like the scene where he cuts to Anakin and the cloak and everything, where reminds me, I have a vision of like he stood in the middle of the field. He says, like, you're still here, like, where is he? Like, he's away over there, for you to get your eye line so you know where to look. And he apparently just shouted, Obi-Wan, and then he just saw someone waving at him in the distance. Yeah, I was actually thinking, here's some live admin on the show. I think also we'll not have a lot of downtime in terms of content. We've got a lot still to come, we'll see, with Loki and probably some stuff after that. But I did like what we did with Ahsoka, that one episode about her. I do think the idea of doing like episodes on particular characters from like stuff we enjoy watching would be good, that kind of look back at the character history. And I definitely think in terms of the Star Wars world, Obi-Wan is somebody I want to talk about, because the other day I realised, like, I have more opinions on Obi-Wan than I thought I did.
Yeah, that's something that could definitely be worth doing if we're, you know, when we're at a loose end for things to talk about, 100%.
Because God forbid we ever take a break. not taking a break, Carl, have you been taking many breaks between your podcast, and have you got anything else you want to plug to people that you've been up to?
No, not much has been going on because Manchester United have been absolutely crap. I've been trying to avoid doing football podcasts at all costs. But I dare say I'll get roped into doing another one at some point, whether I want to or not.
It's not up to you anymore.
But Reece, Scott. What? I'm getting all confused.
Carl, how very dare you? I can't believe you. And by the way, Ray, see, I do not like it.
You've just seen the end of Team Godfather, people.
Carl, I'm from Birmingham, and that's much better than Glasgow. Where the hell is you from?
I've got to tell you, Scott, that's one of the worst impressions I've heard in my life.
I can probably usually do a good Birmingham accent, but trying to get Reese's inflection down is a bit harder. If I had more time to work on it.
I really hope he listens to this one now.
I mean,
Scott will be cutting this out in the edit.
No, fuck him. Fuck him. He still brings up the whole Liam incident from the Rogue Vision quiz, so he condones that behaviour. Fuck him. Eventually, the three of us will get back together. I'm sure some harsh words will be exchanged. For the next episodes of Ahsoka, we'll be back for some Rank Bank. Me and Paul, something that we recorded before I went to Wembley, is finally going to come out because I've had some other things on that I haven't been able to get it out yet. And then our episode we already recorded, where he and I basically do a tour catch-up of what we've been up to. I talk a lot about my London trip and my time in Wembley, and we just shoot the shit, get drunk, and, you know, act like two pals. We haven't seen each other in 3 weeks because we hadn't seen each other since before I went to London. So it's a fun time. I mean, I think there's some wrestling stuff and amongst there at some point. So, make sure to follow Rogue of Pains, @Rogue_Pains, that's called Clint1886. Scott Bolivar and Blog is at SBLink, Carl is at Carl_Fire80, and Reese is at I Don't Give a Fuck. And, you know, dealing with Reese and try do impressions, they're not easy, much like podcasting.
Bye.
Bye.